What's in the bag, Snorri?
Blank-eyed, Snorri passed it over. The damp leather was rough in Felix's hand. The runes, stitched in gold, into the side glittered. It was heavier than it looked, and when he gave it an experimental shake, something inside answered with a metallic rustle. His fingers hovered over the buckle. May I? Snorri nodded once. Felix offered a smile and opened it. He didn't know why, but he was excited to see what was inside. The rune on the front had clearly meant something to Gotrek, so, he reasoned, it surely had to be something important. He coughed at the aroma of stale dwarf sweat that drifted up from inside. It was full of old clothes. Felix tried to hide his disappointment. Trust Snorri Nosebiter to carry a bag of soot-caked rags halfway across the old world. He was about to hand the bag back when a blood-stained shirt slipped aside to reveal a heavy golden chain. Felix took it out for closer inspection and gave the bag back to Snorri.
It's beautiful.
Dwarf maid. Snorri shrugged, so Felix returned his attention to the artifact. Around the thick links, dwarf runes had been engraved in an exquisite hand. Felix ran his finger around one of the links. He was no jeweler, but he recognized quality when he saw it. In fact, the only time he'd seen gold this pure and well-fashioned had been in Carrick Cadrin, when Gotrek had presented him and Kat with their rings. Slowly, his scrolling finger paused. The runes looked familiar. He held his breath. His heart seemed to grow heavy as he spread his fingers. His wedding band glinted in the light. The runes were the same. This chain had belonged to Gotrek. No, it had been a gift from Gotrek. Cold spreading through his chest, Felix tightened his grip on the chain. Who did this belong to, Snorri?
Snorri doesn't remember.
Was it Gotrek's wife? It was, wasn't it? How did you get this? You said nobody was there when the goblins attacked. The old troll slayer looked on the verge of tears. Frost prickled his squashed nose.
Snorri can't.
With hands numbed by more than cold, Felix pushed the chain back into Snorri's keeping. He thought he understood. No wonder Snorri had tried so hard all these years to forget his shame. Snorri had been there that day. Oh, Snorri, he breathed. What did you do? The thick red stone muted the cries of the Oblast dead. The air within the ruined dispatch fort was dank, musty, and stale, and cold too, if one felt it, but buffeted against the wind, it was a gelid kind of chill, like the handshake of a ghoul. Arrow slits and ceiling tears let in light enough to glance off iron wall brackets, where in less hopeless times there might once have been torches. The only illumination of note, in fact, derived from Ulrika herself. In her charred enamel-white plate, she stood in the centre of the chamber with legs braced and hands balled into fists by her side. Amethyst-coloured traces of energy arced from her hands, probing up her vambraces and over her belly. Occasionally, the arcs crossed to produce a crackling burst of nightshade and the tang of ozone. She faced the door. Her eyes glittered like diamonds, and her jaw was set. Concentration gleamed from fang and claw. It was etched into every supernatural sinew.
Is there anything more I can do, General?
Gustav Jaeger slumped back into one of the bowman's nooks, disturbing the snow that had blown in through the narrow embrasure and been allowed to build up there. Breathing shakily, he began fumbling with the collar ties of his cloak, hiding the still seeping punctures in his neck. Ulrika permitted herself a smile of pleasure. So handsome. More men lay scattered across the floor with expressions of bliss on pale faces and blood staining the slashed shoulders of their doublets. They were not Kislevites. Their blood was hers to expend as she saw fit. She wondered if she had always thought in such terms, but then reasoned that she probably had. It was only pragmatic, and as the only child of a March boyar, Ulrika had never been anything but that.
Thank you, Gustav. That is sufficient for now. If I require more power, then I will summon more of your men.
With a faint look of disappointment, Gustav lapsed into semi-consciousness. Ulrika watched his fluttering eyelids and silently moving lips in the same way that she had once watched her father's hunting dogs as they slept. She wondered what such a simple animal might dream of.
And I, Boyarina?
Speaking his native Kislevarin, Damir stood amongst the splayed bodies of the southerners as though this was an utterly natural state of affairs. His hands were on his hips, where they could be close to his hatchets. A man of the troll country, through and through. His yellow eyes flashed with amethyst discharge.
I will be weakened while I perform the ritual. I will be relying on you to defend me from whatever may come.
Damir nodded and turned back to the door. He would know what to do. The man had served her since the outbreak of the war. She had been in the troll country then, on Lamian business, and had been overjoyed by the opportunity to spread her claws. She had seen more fighting then than at any other time in her new life, but the sheer number and power of the arch-enemy had been too much. Even then she had been loath to leave, and Damir and his people had objected bitterly to abandoning their tribal lands. Fortunately, her kiss had opened his mind to reason and to a whole new world of possibilities. To servitude. Perhaps one day to immortality. She just couldn't understand why mortals were always so intransigent. Could they not see that she only wanted what was best for them? She knew that she should not blame them. They could not perceive the world as sharply as she could. Their minds could not process it with the same clarity and speed as one of the arisen. Felix, for instance, would undoubtedly object to her using his nephew this way. It was more than just jealousy. He honestly seemed to think it wrong. She pitied him that, as she pitied poor Katerina, trapped in a frail and failing mortal shell because of her lover's weakness of imagination. Trying to see things in the limited fashion of her companions, she reasoned that they would probably not appreciate what she was trying to achieve now, either. She was going to open a door. Invasion after invasion had steeped Prague's bedrock with the stuff of chaos. The means to ritually tap it was similar to the magic with which the Auric Bastion was erected. Deep in concentration, Ulrika bared her fangs. The very ritual that one of her own kind had delivered into the hands of Balthazar Gelt. Not that any man of the Empire now alive was going to offer their thanks to the sacrifices of the Arisen that had allowed their supreme patriarch to save them. Nor would they mourn the destruction of the nation that he had not seen fit to spare. Borrowed blood boiled within her veins, and Gabriella had wondered why Ulrika had left her for Vlad von Karstein. The Empire had let Kislev fall, had made a puppet of Boyar Sergei Tanarov of Eringrad, and claimed the stolen territory of North Ostermark for its own. Even in the end times, men were still men. They needed the shepherding hand of the Arisen. And with that hand, she was going to drive a stake through the heart of chaos and watch the rest of the world drown in its blood. Max Schreiber's mind perused the corrupted ether of Prague. It was a web of life and of death that touched every creature currently contesting the city's walls. In an abstract sense, every natural scholar knew about the interconnectedness of life. Every creature had its place in that web, surrounded and connected by those it killed and those that killed it. What fewer scholars knew, however, was that what was true for life was also true for chaos, only more so. A portion of Max's mind stood now with the beastmen on the city's ramparts. He felt their near-human soup of hatreds and fears, as demon-possessed munitions set the sky ablaze and the walls a-tremble. They bleated their battle cries as chaos warriors stormed their position by the thousand. Max moved on. A wyvern, with two heads and poisonous spines, roosted upon the hanging shell of the old wizard's tower. What had it been called? The memory rose up from another time and place. There it was. Fire Spire. The power of chaos had twisted it into its current misshapen form during the last great war. Its history was irrelevant now. He saw it in flat monochrome through the wyvern's eyes, felt the latent magic beneath its claws as it peered through the blizzard for prey in the streets below. Again, Max's thoughts shifted. A band of trolls lumbered against the thrust of the wind and snow down the Grand Parade towards the Gate of Gargoyles. Max shared the glacial quiet of their minds. They had a destination, the gate. They had a purpose, a vague imprint of a white-haired sorceress. Nothing Max would consider true thought, but there was seductiveness in simplicity. Calling on the same rote exercises that had served him as an acolyte of the Light Order, Max differentiated his mind from theirs. Warp lighting stabbed from the tormented sky, exploding with a thunderclap against the highest point of the city, the north-facing watchtower of its hilltop citadel. A flurry of wild magic rippled out from its pinnacle, obliterating the falling snow and haloing the dark presence within. For a moment, Max felt their minds touch. It was a servant of the Troll King, an immortal monster, so ancient and terrible that Max could not even begin to comprehend the nature of its thoughts. Its long-extinct race had trod the earth with the Old Ones, before even the coming of the Chaos Gods. Their own name for their kind was long forgotten. Now, men had a different name for those few that remained. There came a low growl that transcended both the physical and etheric realms, and Max's spirit took flight. He forced himself to focus. It did not require the hyper-surreality of mage sense to perceive the fan-like conductor array being assembled by the warlock in the cell opposite, or the mind-opening trance of the goblin shaman in the next one after that. Secrets were difficult to keep in confinement, and one man's hunch could easily become another being's race to the finish. And no doubt that had been Throg's intent. Nothing incentivized success like competition with a hated rival, and the very visceral consequences of failure. The Troll King was brutal, but he was smart. Max felt that his continuing survival was owed in large part to his willingness to concede that fact. That, however, was to do his captor's intelligence a disservice. It was neither hubris nor chaos taint to acknowledge that he was a more adept wizard and a better researcher than any goblin, skaven, lich or ice witch that Throg could acquire. It was just a fact. And the research he had conducted under the patronage of the Troll King had led him to the inalienable conclusion that there was something wrong with the world. The minds of men were not capable of controlling more than one of the eight derivations of high magic. The lessons of Teclis to the first magisters on this subject could not have been clearer. To even attempt to circumvent this inviolate law of nature was to open one's mind to chaos. And yet in his experimentations with eliciting higher thought in the troll in his cell, he had accidentally touched upon Azir, the celestial, the magic of abstract thinking and narrative order amongst seeming chaos. That was the reason for the self-splitting spell he now performed. It was the proof of his suspicions. Max's etheric self could see in colours that he should not. He could draw connections that he previously could not. The world had indeed gone wrong. The winds of magic no longer flowed as they should. The legacy of Nagash's rise. For all that, however, for all he had seen and suffered, he was still a magister of the light. He could not dismiss the possibility that these new abilities were a symptom of his own corruption, rather than some global shift in the rules of magic. Even Max himself could see something amiss in his current pursuit. Scholarly curiosity could become obsession. Self-preservation could mutate easily into willing determination. It was not every day that one was set the task of creating a new race of intelligent beings. He probed within himself, but could find nothing overtly at fault. He had long-standing mental wards, all apparently still intact, to warn of and resist any incursion by chaos. But of course any taint deep enough to afflict his personality could circumvent or corrode even the best-laid safeguards without his being aware. A man could second-guess himself to oblivion once he started down that road. What he could say for certain was that what he sought to accomplish did not feel evil, which meant there was every chance of him doing some good. By helping Throg stand strong, he would help the Empire. Yes, that much was obvious. His homeland needed its strong man in the north. And now, his mind opening to the pure glory of the ether undivided, he saw how it would be done. Back in his cell, his body laughed. It was so beautiful, seductive even in its simplicity. Max had told Throg no lies. He was neither a Teclis nor a Nagash, but he did not think it too bold to count himself amongst the second tier of magicians below them. If what Throg demanded could be done, then Max Schreiber could do it. Conceptualizing the ritual cant to return him to his bruised flesh and broken bones, Max felt a trembling in the web of chaos. Focusing his divinations, he followed the source of the disturbance to a place beyond the moribund spell wards of Prague's walls and to the very periphery of his senses. It was another spellcaster. Outside. So unexpected was that, he was almost ready to believe that his own senses were at fault, and with them, everything else he had become prepared to accept. It was with good reason that even the most brazen demon prince dared not deploy magic within reach of Throg's gates. For a moment longer, his spirit lingered at the outermost limits of Prague's walls, hovering above the Gate of Gargoyles as it opened to disgorge a band of brutish trolls into the besieging horde. Max looked away. He had long ago ceased to wonder at the sound made by a warrior crushed inside his own chaos armor. Instead, he looked outside. The mage's signature resonance felt familiar, and yet not. Almost like an old acolyte who had matured into a magister, or a friend who had since fallen to chaos. A reassuringly human sense of pity for the poor soul was marred only by a bleak curiosity. Whoever it was, they were in for a cruel surprise. Chapter 13. King of Trolls. Felix knew more about trolls than most men. One of his earliest adventures had brought him face to face with such a beast in the bowels of Karak Eight Peaks. With his own hand had he struggled to force steel through flesh as hard as rock, only to then watch his best effort regenerate before his eyes. He had seen men dissolved in the monster's infamously potent gastric juices, and seen others crushed to jelly by its sheer massivity and physical strength. Later, he had sought out and studied the Anatomicum Bestiarum, which, despite coming complete with coloured illustrations of blank, lopsided heads and dissected intestinal tracts, was a treatise that had somehow passed him by during his studies at the University of Altdorf. There was, however, one hitherto overlooked fact that Felix very much hoped he would survive long enough to see disseminated in the next volume of My Travels with Gotrek, or at least as a referenced appendix in the next edition of the Anatomicum. Trolls were not afraid of ghosts. Confusion and fear required a complexity of thought that a troll could not boast, The spirits, shackled to Ulrika's maze, coiled around the hulking frames that condensed out of the snow and darkness. They tugged, prodded, whispered in bullet-hole ears, but the dim brutes came on, leaving the screams of the Northman horde behind them under an avalanche of walking stone. With a cold and spreading dread, whose evolved sophistication provided him no consolation, Felix drew his sword. Caragul's former owner had, after all, met his end in the belly of that Karak Eight Peaks troll. Felix was still debating whether it was best to run or to fight, as the men working on the northern barricade gave a wail, and, weapons in their hands, did what came most naturally. They opened fire. Handguns popped, discharging flutes of black smoke and peppering the leading beast with a solid iron shot. It was too dark, and Felix was too far away to judge how much of the fire was simply wayward, and how much of it ricocheted off the stone titan's grey hide. One moment more was all it took for the stone troll to hit the barricade. The loose wall simply disintegrated around the stone troll's charge. More and more trolls crashed through after it, in a storm of masonry aggregates and crushed men too slow to run. The big stone troll glazed over in confusion upon finding itself in open space, where its brain still believed there to be a wall. It was a granite colossus, 15 feet high, its body spined with arrows and axe blades and jagged with regeneration scars. Dull moon eyes blinked slowly over the men fleeing from it into the ruined outpost. Its mouth dropped open. Then a pistol shot, fired one-handed by a running man, blasted a chunk off its lower jaw. Blood spurted sluggishly. Once, twice, before the flesh began to close. The troll's tongue flopped out of its regrowing mouth as it focused on the red-crested warrior steaming towards it with an axe held high and a dwarfish war cry. Still, Felix hesitated. His grip tightened indecisively on his sword. His feet seemed to root deeper into the snow. Should he help Gotrek or warn Ulrika? Before he had a chance to arrive at a decision, Snorri Nosebiter issued a furious hoot of joy, flourished his axe and hammer, and charged. Felix swore with the vivid colour of the well-travelled, as Snorri tottered into the herd of Norse cattle towards the fence between them and the trolls. The troll slayer looked ridiculous. Sweeping what the harpies of Kazaiko had left of his cloak over his left shoulder to free his sword arm, Felix hurried after him. Ulrika could take care of herself. Only a miracle could look after Snorri if Gotrek found out about his wife's chain without a ready explanation of how it came into Snorri's keeping. It could be innocent, and probably was, but Gotrek was hardly known for his understanding. Felix was firmly of the mind that Snorri should absolutely not be left alone with Gotrek until Prague was a long way behind them all. Snorri hobbled through the herd with Felix close behind. He held his sword upright and his arms tight to his chest, mindful of the hot-blooded belligerents that pressed perilously close on all sides. All it would take was one wrong step, one horn swipe at an imagined itch, and Felix wouldn't have to worry about trolls. They emerged the other side into a bitter flurry of snow, Snorri scrambling under the fence while Felix swung a stile. Still climbing fences, Felix thought ruefully. Oddly, though, he didn't feel nearly so stiff this time. While Snorri picked himself up out of the snow, Felix quickly surveyed the scene. The Linsk was to the left. The floodplain of southern Prague and Ulrika's ghost maze were ahead and to the right. The trolls had smashed through the barricade and reduced a swathe of the Northmen's stockade to splinters. Already cattle were wandering aimlessly into the surrounding ruins and getting in the way of the soldiers desperately trying to run the other way. With cries of despair, some scattered into the buildings and returned fire. Relentless, the pursuing trolls stamped through the ineffectual scatter of handgun and pistol shot as blithely as they did through the buildings that their minds couldn't adjust to the presence of fast enough to avoid. How could men fight an army like that? What was stopping the troll king from conquering the world? Felix watched open-mouthed as whole structures went down in geysers of red dust. The rumble of falling stonework couldn't obliterate the screams of those buried inside. Men crawled through the snow to escape, fleeing towards the lanterns that shone from spears by the dispatch fort's gate. There, Felix could just about pick out Ulrika's Ungol guard assembling into ranks. Their bright wool coats fluttered gaily over hide armour, tassels whipped from the heads of their spears. Chapka hats glittered under the lantern light with frost. Why were they just standing there? Felix's initial annoyance faded when he realized they didn't need to go anywhere. The trolls were coming straight for them. Felix's lip twitched with the sudden realization. I called Hellbrass had claimed the Troll King was collecting sorcerers. He was after Ulrika. He stopped running and glanced back. The trolls were being slowed by gunfire and distracted by the Northmen's livestock and fences and the deep snow, but no force of men was going to stop them. His blood ran cold. Gustav was with her.
Snorri, wait! We have to go back!
No sooner had he said the words than Snorri bellowed an unintelligible stream of sounds and hurtled towards a river troll that, distracted by the cattle that surrounded it, had blundered off the main thrust of the assault and into Snorri's reach. It was hunched nearly double, flattened almost by the mess of its own shoulders. Its head was squashed and dripped with a shank of red algae. Trolls adopted the character of their habitat, Felix knew, and this one was the rugged white of the cliffs of Nordland. In one chalky fist, it dragged a broken chaos warrior like a club. The vinegar reek of its breath made the hair on Felix's face shrivel. Its bellow as it pushed aside a shaggy Norse bull and charged onto Snorri's weapons shook Felix to his insides. Snorri's hammer smote splinters from the monster's kneecap, while his axe chipped ineffectually at its belly. The dwarf dodged a sweep of the troll's club, then swung a mace kick to its splintered kneecap to drive it down onto one knee. The troll smacked its lips dumbly as Snorri ducked under its arm and landed another kick into its side. Snorri laughed, skipping a single-legged tattoo around the kneeling troll, under its grasping claws, and then reached up for a fistful of the semi-mineral red mat that tufted from its chin. The monster roared as Snorri tightened his grip and used it to launch himself off the ground and land a shuddering headbutt between its eyes. A strange ochre fluid squirted from the troll's eyes, and a crack fissured its nose. Snorri staggered back, grinning like an idiot, with a big chalky print covering his face. Felix winced. Even the troll seemed to have felt that. With a roar, the troll swept its chaos warrior over the dazed slayer and at Felix's head like a morning star. Felix ducked, dropping into a barrel roll that carried him under the hopeful stroke and came up facing the troll's groin. Though lacking Snorri Nosebiter's wrestler's brawn and brute power, his magical blade carved open the troll's thigh like a roasted joint. Its passage halted with a jarring clang when it struck bone. The troll flailed its arms in confusion as Felix circled behind, applying the precise pressure, angle, and carving action to sever the troll's femoral artery on the blade's egress and spray his right side with blood. It was remarkable in hindsight what could be learned from a colour illustration. Losing blood faster than even the river troll's formidable metabolism could replenish it, the monster crashed face down into the snow. Snorri made loud and messy work of hewing its head from its shoulders. Felix sagged, but was quickly pressed to move aside for a bull that had wandered across from one of the shattered pens to investigate. It snorted hotly and poked the downed troll with its horns. It wasn't dead. A troll could regenerate even a severed head. It would take fire to finally put it down, and Felix had nothing of the sort.
Come on,
Felix wheezed, turning back to Snorri.
We can still get back to the fort to... Snorri?
Wiping snow and troll blood from his face, Felix saw Snorri barreling through the snow towards the wreck of the north barricade with an ululating outpouring of glee. For there, knee-deep in rubble and held at bay by a frighteningly small-looking dwarf with an axe, was the largest troll Felix had ever seen. It had been the first to breach the barricade, but while the other trolls had been faced with Gustav's Free Company, this one had had the misfortune to run into Gotrek Gurnason.
Snorri! Get back here!
Knowing it was a pointless waste of breath even before he opened his mouth, Felix shouldered his sword and ran after him. Kolya crouched in the foxhole he had dug out of the snow, and sighted the stone troll down a knocked and partially drawn shaft. It was taller than a mounted man, and looked like something that had stepped out from the rocks of Urzabir, where Urson had taken a bite out of the world. Thinking of biting, he massaged a handful of snow into his gums. His mouth still throbbed where Gurnison had kicked out his teeth. It was a wonder it had not broken his jaw. He tracked his aim to the dwarf. Gurnison was not a quarter the troll's mass. He was bleeding freely where his exertions had reopened unhealed wounds and was blowing hard. Somehow, though, the dwarf found strength to brandish his axe and beckon the behemoth on. He was mad. He was infuriating and, Kolya was beginning to suspect, singularly blessed by his people's gods. The troll reared up to its awesome height and punched down. Instead of diving clear as any sane man would, the dwarf gave a colic roar and hammered his upswinging axe into the troll's knuckles. The rune weapon split the monster's hand up to the wrist bone and, impossibly, diverted the punch over his head. The troll roared as its fist ploughed through the snow. Kolya shook his head in wonder. The dwarf was astounding. Loose inside the beast's guard, Gurnison unleashed everything in a brutal flurry. His star metal blade cut the troll's belly to ribbons, freeing a ropey mass of steaming entrails that the dwarf ground underfoot with every appearance of satisfaction. The splattered juices produced a sharp hiss where they landed, and smelling the acid corrosion of his boots, even the dwarf withdrew with a grimace. He slid his boots under the snow until they stopped smoking. The troll's belly was already knitting back together.
"Are you gonna help?"
he called over his shoulder.
"No!"
The dwarf thought about that for a moment and started to laugh.
"I like you, manling!"
"Oh, help me," Kolya muttered under his breath.
He had almost come to like the murdering slayer himself. Cackling, Gurnison swept his axe through a rune-streaked blur of a figure of eight. From the expression on his face, Kolya wondered if dwarf hearing might be better than men's.
"Stand back, then, and take word of this doom to that ghastly horse-loving afterlife of yours."
Kolya lowered his bow. If he was resigned to watch, then there was no more fighting to be done here. It was not that he did not pity those oblast men in the fort, but they were already as dead as their boyarina, and it was pointless to mourn a dead man. Their screams were tinny, separated from him now by the roar of the trolls and the crash of collapsing buildings. Black powder weapons crackled in the distance like a dying fire. Set against that expectation, the sound of another charging fighter actually caught him off guard. The senile old dwarf with the metal leg careened through the loose rubble and snow, waving an axe and a hammer above his bald head. A leather satchel slapped at his back like a riding crop.
"It's not his turn!"
the dwarf yelled, muscling Gurnison aside, just as the stone troll dispatched an open-handed punch that would have ripped Gurnison's head off had he still been there to meet it. Gurnison gave a shout as the body charge of the other dwarf threw him sideways and sent him plunging into a rocky snow heap. The newcomer wobbled drunkenly on the uneven ground, but somehow managed to bat the troll's punch aside on his hammer. The impact spun him around, but he kept his feet, coming dizzily about and raising his weapons.
"That horse kicked Snorri harder than that!"
All Kolya could do was gape. Was insanity a common trait in the dwarfs, or had the end times cracked their minds? Gotrek pulled himself from the drift and shook snow from his crest. His entire body looked clenched and swollen with wrath. He strode towards Snorri, axe gripped in one massive fist.
"Of all the dooms in the world, Snorri Nosebiter, you had to come and spoil mine. Again." "This one's Snorri's,"
Snorri growled, fending Gurnison off with his left arm while simultaneously hammering away at the troll's groin.
"That's so?"
Gurnison and Snorri tangled arms, each using the spare hand to strike a claim on the troll. Snorri's hammer bashed its hip. Gurnison's axe severed its arm at the elbow. Gurnison produced a triumphant leer that cracked under Snorri's elbow. The dwarfs shouted insults and managed to wrestle each other down under the troll's swinging fist.
"Damn it, Snorri!"
Snorri spluttered snow from his mouth and clambered on top of Gurnison's back, wedging the struggling slayer down beneath his thighs.
If Snorri's rememberer hadn't pulled his crest out, that would have got him. I'll pull more than that if you get in my way again. This one isn't yours, said Snorri patiently, as though training a horse. The spider lady told Snorri he would have his doom when all his friends were together again.
With a tectonic rumble, the troll lumbered forwards, cracking Snorri's forehead with a stray knee and hurling him back. The troll stamped after him, missing Gurnison's back by inches. Shivering with fury, the dwarf drew himself up. His one eye glittered hatefully. He grasped his axe two-handed, so tightly that the scabs on his biceps burst.
I couldn't give a rabid rat's dribble what you think your human witch said. I've been here from the start. I was at the Tobol Crossing. I was in Kislev City.
The slayer looked hot enough to melt the frozen sea. His words meant nothing to Snorri, but Kolya, they hit like a charge of winged lancers. He and the dwarf had shared a battlefield. The Tobol Crossing had been a rout he had been lucky to survive, and though the Dushaika Rota had long fled, the sack of Kislev City was by all garbled accounts nothing short of a massacre. That the dwarf had survived both, and more, was further testament to his prowess.
I've been searching since the fall. I need no one's help to fail again today. Snorri's not been having a fun time either,
Snorri protested, hobbling out of the troll's path and then slamming a kick into the side of the troll's knee. He looked up as Gurnison came up behind him.
But you don't want to hear about it.
Gurnison moved so fast that his elbow blurred into his fist, smashing a haymaker through Snorri's jaw. The bigger dwarf hit the ground like a slab of meat. The power behind Gurnison's arm sent him sliding a short way through the snow. Gurnison shook out his knuckles and re-established his two-handed grip on his axe. He returned his attention to the troll.
Because I don't care about it.
Gurnison's rune axe hewed upwards into the troll's midriff. The monster bellowed, swaying back and forth as the dwarf levered his axe free in a spurt of acidic bile. His friend was already forgotten. Kolya shook his head. The dwarf really was a selfish Zabokya. With a bittersweet shout, Gurnison reversed his grip and thundered his axe into the troll's opposite hip, almost meeting his first strike in the middle and chopping the stone troll clean in two. As it was, the troll wavered back, tongues of regenerative tissue licking out from the open wounds.
There's something Snorri has to ask,
Snorri shouted hoarsely, having rolled onto all fours. His metal leg stuck out sideways like a pissing dog, but his skull must have been similarly ironclad.
It's about his shame. Tell your priest.
He blew up.
Gurnison snorted.
Lucky for some.
Snorri heaved himself up. His scarred cheeks were flushed bright red, as if with shame.
Snorri was there!
Kolya read Gurnison's lips shaping the question where, before the dwarf grit his teeth, shook his head and muttered,
I still don't care.
Angrily, Snorri shoved his weapons into his breeches and reached for the bag that he wore over his shoulder.
If you won't listen and you won't let Snorri have his doom, then he will show you.
He yanked at the strap, forgetting to unbuckle it in his haste. But before he could spot his oversight and do something about it, a rich voice shouted from the direction of the river.
Snorri, stop!
It was the Empire man, Jaeger. He had an open palm raised, his cloak hanging from it like a scrag of red ribbons. The Norse bulls close around him snorted aggressively at the flapping strands. His mail was scratched and loose several links. He was older than Kolya's father would have been had a goblin raider's arrow not taken him early, but there was a steeliness about him that the grey in his hair and beard and the furrows in his brow seemed to enforce. In a strange way, he reminded Kolya of Gurnison. Snorri looked at the man blankly. His hand clung to his satchel buckle as if he had forgotten what it was doing there.
"This isn't the time!"
shouted Jaeger, out of breath from running. He stabbed his sword into the snow so that he could lean on it. Then he gazed pointedly at the troll. His eyes widened.
Oh, blood of Sigmar!
A yellowish plume was rising from between the troll's striated rows of teeth. Its gut rippled and began to bloat. Its throat swelled. With the honed reflexes of a solitary hunter, Kolya drew back his bowstring, aimed right down the monster's opening mouth, and loosed. The shaft smacked through soft flesh and embedded in the stony tissue at the back of the troll's neck. The troll gagged, flailed in Kolya's direction despite his being a good 100 feet away, and then spewed a gush of steaming yellow vomit that missed the two dwarfs by the height of a slayer's crest. Gurnison's face screwed up at the smell of singed hair coming from the tip of his mohawk, while behind him yellow vapour hissed into the air as snow and rock were dissolved. Gargling its own stomach acids, the troll lumbered now towards Kolya, falling straight into the Kurgan-dug trench that Kolya had spotted by the darker-coloured snow and used to position his own foxhole. Trolls were ruggedly built and powerful, but without a man's intellect, they were just another animal to be hunted. He knocked another arrow to his bowstring.
"What did you do that for?"
Gurnison bellowed angrily, yellow-red steam rising from his crest as though his head were on fire. Kolya shrugged, holding his aim as the monster struggled to dig its way out of the snow-filled ditch.
"You can die, Zaboyka. That is good. But I made no promise to these others."
Gurnison glowered at the other dwarf. Kolya had no idea what past lay between them, but it wasn't going to end well.
"You cheat me again, Snorri Nosebiter."
Equally angry, Snorri brandished his two weapons. Held side by side, the stance could have been intended to emphasize the older slayer's greater bulk.
"Last to get killed by a troll buys the beer."
Ulrika blotted the riot of gunshots and screams from her mind. It felt as if she were being lifted up on a rising swell of blood magic. It was an incredible out-of-body sensation, one that she could only wish she had more time to explore. A crash, like a collapsing rock face, impelled her to open one eye and divert a portion of her attention towards what was going on in the real world. Such compartmentalization of thought and action was yet another of the gifts of the Arisen. A brutally unequal melee raged in the doorway. Her loyal guard of Ungol warriors screamed as they battled to keep formation, warding off a glittering ice troll with their spears. As Ulrika watched, a spear shattered, and the fierce nomad that wielded it broke under a punch from a crystalline fist. At a word from Ulrika, the man creaked upright on broken bones and continued to stab dumbly with the stub of his shaft. Behind them, arquebusiers in the mismatched colours of Gustav's Free Company knelt in ranks, primed match cords and rattled into a firing line. The staccato bark of gunfire within the enclosed space was deafening and filled the chamber with smoke. The first rank knelt to reload, while the second took aim and fired. Chips of stone-like flesh sprayed from bullet wounds, but the trolls kept on coming, crunching through the Ungols faster than Ulrika could reanimate them. Soldiers in piecemeal plate mail assembled into formation with longswords and pikes. Their faces were wan, their eyes glassy. They were petrified, but they would die for their immortal mistress. Leading them, Gustav played weakly with his pistols.
"Hold by me," Ulrika murmured. "I will still need loyal men on the other side."
She would rather have retained her own Ungols, but Gustav's Free Company were too weak to fight at the moment, and in any case, it did not matter. The bodies of Damir and his men would all still be here, waiting for her when she returned with Max and her master's boon. Distancing herself from the immediate danger, she opened her expanded senses to the black depths of the Oblast's magic. Successive incursions by Chaos had made this a cursed place. Cursed, but powerful. As she drew that magic in, exploited it to mould before herself the outline of a shimmering portal, she became aware of the fact that she could no longer sense the beast she had been struggling with so long. After a second's panic, she found it. It was calm, as if its own power and rage were placated as hers grew. In fact, she was no longer entirely sure where Ulrika ended and the monster began. It was this place. Not for the first time she wondered what had become of the Arisen of Prague.
Damir! She called.
The Ungol chieftain pulled out from the fighting. He was still alive, but he was badly hurt. His patchwork coat was bloodied and ripped, and he looked to be carrying a broken arm. Despite his injuries, there was nothing in his face but love unconditional and the desire to serve. Ulrika could no longer imagine the time when she had found that displeasing.
Bring me Felix.
The man nodded, and then, after a moment's thought, she added,
Only Felix.
An impulse flashed across the ether, a stab of will that originated in the dark citadel of Prague. Shivering in his high tower as he enacted the final preparations for his own great ritual, Max Schreiber perceived it as a tremor in the all-connecting web of chaos that lay over the city. Drowning in borrowed power, and as raw to it as an open wound, Ulrika felt it pulse across her mind. Hacking at the stone troll's grasping arm as it floundered in the snow-filled trench, Felix saw it more immediately as a red glow condensing out of the air. Of them all, it was only Max who recognized the signature for what it was. He gave it no further attention. He had been expecting no less. Throg, the Troll King, had entered the fray. The troll began to glow, red light blazing from its eyes and bleeding from the fissures in its rocky flesh. Already on the backswing, after hewing into the monster's elbow, Felix fell back before the explosive intensity of its gaze. He squinted into the glare. The troll's eyes seemed to be following him, studying him, a pair of burning rubies painting him red against the night dark. Heart in his mouth, he angled his sword unconsciously into a guard, firming a fighting stance into the snow. Watching him with what Felix could only call interest, the troll's ridgeline lips cracked upwards. Was it smiling? Could trolls smile? In the corner of his vision, he saw Kolya draw back his bow but hold. On the other side of the ditch, even the two slayers seemed momentarily taken aback by the change. The troll's lips parted further, crunching experimentally through a range of motion like an orator preparing for the stage. Where previously the troll had been distracted by so many assailants on all sides, now its big hands dug into the snow at the lip of the trench, and it hauled itself slowly up. Its eyes were fixed on Felix. A rush of noxious air came up from its gut, shaped by a fluke conformation of lips and tongue into what almost sounded like a word.
Hagar!
Did he just say my name? Said Felix, tightening his grip on Caragul just a little more.
Trolls don't talk, said Gotrek.
I don't know, said Kolya cautiously. It seems brighter than the average troll.
Gotrek gave a derisive snort.
Snorri's brighter than the average troll. And Snorri can talk,
Snorri stated proudly, then hobbled towards the edge of the trench and cracked his hammer against the back of the troll's skull. More of that red light shone through the cracks that spidered out from the point of impact, but the troll didn't flinch. It wasn't just that the monster didn't feel it. Felix could see the thought behind the action. It knew that Snorri couldn't seriously hurt it with the weapons he had. Already those cracks were beginning to close over, and rather than waste effort retaliating against an assailant it did not seriously consider a threat, it was hauling itself out of its hole and coming after Felix. Felix glanced at Caragul. The magical blade shone dully against the snow that fell around it. He supposed he should probably feel honored that a troll thought so highly of him. Abandoning his stance, Felix hurriedly backed up. He tried to tell himself that this was nothing he had not faced before, but he wasn't terribly convincing about it. Before, this had been another troll, but now it was something far worse. It was the eyes. There was something downright terrifying about the intelligent way the monster was looking at him. It knew who he was, what he could do, and was looking forward to the meager test of putting an end to him. It bellied out of the ditch, then drew its knees underneath it. A Kislevite expletive and a snapshot from a composite bow pulled Felix's glance right. Kolya's arrow snapped off the troll's lumpen shoulder. With a curse, Kolya crawled out of his foxhole. A fresh arrow already knocked and aimed, and sidestepped around to the monster's front. Wise to the threat, the troll kept its face and the soft parts it contained turned away from the frustrated archer. Snorri was hobbling hurriedly around the far side of the trench, yelling at Felix to leave his troll alone, and scuffing snow and sending rubble flying in his haste, while Gotrek snarled across from the far side. Felix swallowed and brought up his sword as the troll stretched itself out of its muscular hunch and to its full, appalling height. A sprinkling of frost cascaded from crevasses between muscles that had never previously been fully flexed. The troll tensed them all now, clenched its arms, its chest, its thighs, and balled its savage claws into fists. Its sheer bulk and power temporarily shadowed Felix against the wind and snow. "I'm being taunted by a troll," Felix thought. It might just have been the warmth that came from being out of the wind, but the idea left him feeling strangely hot. He had not journeyed all the way from his new life in Altdorf for this. He had not left Kat behind and brought Gustav to almost certain death for this.
"Do something, then!"
Felix shouted up, dipping his guard in a foolhardy moment of bravado.
"You're not the biggest thing I've ever killed!"
With a growl that sounded almost like it came from two beasts, the troll jabbed for the shoulder of Felix's sword hand. Felix drew in the arm and rolled his shoulder out of the way. It would have been enough, but the attack was a feint, the true attack coming with a backhand swipe to blindside Felix while his back was turned in the other direction. It was Felix's hard-earned alley brawler's instincts that saved him, that and a shout from Kolya, and he managed to contort his shoulders enough for the massive gnarled forearm to lunge over his head. Felix didn't even try to stay on his feet. Bent completely off balance, he hit the ground and rolled, coming up again half a dozen feet back. He shook snow from his hair and brought up his sword. Another arrow cracked against the troll's ear. Felix kicked himself for failing to recognize the feint. He was not some callow college duelist. He had matched swords with the best. In fairness, however, he had never yet fenced with a troll. He had no idea how to pick up the cues in their body language. He doubted there was a man alive that could.
"Hold on, manling!"
A guttural howl roared across the trench as Gotrek took the gap at a run. The dwarf's steaming crest ruffled in the wind. The arrows still stuck in his chest quivered as if excited by the flight. Gotrek's strength continued to amaze. Even Felix, with his longer legs, would have thought twice about making that leap. The slayer's axe was already a blur of motion as he thumped into the troll's deep footprint on the trench's near side and sent the blade cleaving through the monster's hamstrings with a sound like a snapping cable. The troll gave a mangled cry and swung back, catching the slayer a glancing blow to the temple that nevertheless flipped him head over heels and planted him on his back under a cloud of snow. Felix pressed the advantage his former companion had bought him, hewing madly into the troll's belly and sides. Stone chips and gruelish grey blood flying in all directions, the troll retreated. A stub of wall turned to dust under its feet. It was heading for the river. Another arrow ricocheted off the troll's chest. In a crazed blur of weapons, Snorri appeared beside Felix. Felix was taken aback by the old dwarf's fury. Of course, Snorri was a slayer too, but Felix had never seen him quite so determined to die. Its wounds healing apace, the troll continued to back off regardless. Felix followed it every step of the way, with Snorri never more than a mad lunge behind. Felix felt something brush his cheek, and he quickly brought up his sword to guard as he glanced across to see what it was. There was nothing there, just a residual shape in the falling snow that might have hinted at a person. A whisper in the opposite ear snapped him back the other way. A cold hand knotted his guts. It was a voice he recognized. But he had fallen here in Prague a long time ago. "Uli?" Felix whispered. He looked up, noticing the waspish shapes streaking through the snow overhead. Every so often, one swept down to tug back on Felix's cloak or whisper something of such dread import that Felix just could not make out the words. Behind him, Kolya had lowered his bow. The Kislevite kissed his carved stone and muttered a prayer. Snorri didn't seem to have noticed. tricked. The troll wasn't wounded at all. It had just lured them away from the fighting at the dispatch fort and out into Ulrika's ghost maze. The realization came too late, as a moment later Felix looked north into the falling snow and the spirits cavorting through it to see a dark mass driving towards them. It was men. Beast men, to be more precise. It was lots and lots of beast men. The scattered Kurgan still camped out on the floodplain were being swept aside by the advance of a vast herd. Felix couldn't count their numbers in the dark, but he could hear the braying of what sounded like far too many. The ground trembled beneath their cloven hooves. The trumpeting cries and bloated silhouettes of larger beasts broke up the mass of what might otherwise have been boring. There were more trolls, at least one fearsomely mutated four-armed minotaur with bone swords for hands and glowing tattoos crawling over its hairless flesh, and a bloated toad-like behemoth that Felix could not even begin to describe and did not want to see any closer. It was as if all the beasts of chaos had rallied to the Troll King's call. With a sixth sense of realization, Felix thought that in all likelihood they had.
"Snorri!"
he shouted, waving to get the old slayer's attention.
"We have to get back to the others! We have to warn Ulrika!"
But Snorri wasn't paying attention. The dwarf continued to hammer blows down onto the glowing stone troll, bellowing at it to hit back as he drove it steadily towards the river. Looking for help, he saw Gotrek pick himself out of the snow. The slayer looked at the onrushing beastmen, knuckled gore from his one good eye, then smacked the side of his head to stop its ringing and looked again. He grinned.
"Not now, Gotrek! We have to go back!"
Before Gotrek could answer, Kolya took up his bow and pointed back in the direction of the fort. Felix swung that way and squinted into the dark. The snow rumbled as if carrying the shock of distant thunder. Felix's heart sank. How could things get any worse? He raised his sword, then gave an exultant shout as Damir galloped into view on his tough Ungol pony. The thick-skinned Ungol captain guided his mount solely with knees and stirrups. He looked to be carrying a broken arm, but his narrow yellow eyes were drawn with determination. His fur chapka was tied under his chin so it would not slip with the wind. Rings, charms, buckles and coloured ribbons fluttered angrily as he raised an axe in greeting. Or was it warning? The thunder grew nearer, too loud to be down to just one rider, and the snow behind Damir's back had taken on a wavering darkness, as though it hit an avalanche or a tidal wave. Felix backed away, heart drumming a warning of its own, as a wall of snorting bulls stampeded through the snow on the Ungol's tail. The troll's attack must have spooked them, and now they were coming right for Felix and the others, trapped between the river and the beastman herd. He almost dropped his sword and gave up then. What had he done to deserve this? For a moment he considered giving up, skipping the inevitable denouement to his life. But then he thought of Max, held in some dungeon just a few miles away. He thought of his nephew and Ulrika, beset by trolls at his back. He thought of Kat and the child she might not carry. Gritting his teeth fiercely, he shook his head. No. Dying now would be easy, all right. But it wouldn't be right. He couldn't speak for Gotrek and Snorri, but he for one intended to return to Altdorf the hero, to see the world emerge from its current trials as it had been before. Quickly, he assessed the situation. The beastmen were closing from the north, and the stampede from the south. He could just now pick out the shape of the pair of trolls that were chasing the bulls down. The din of the two built like colliding storm fronts. There was no way out. One eye on both threats, Felix backed towards the river. Wait. Was that even escape, or just death by another means?
"Into the river!"
Felix shouted, sheathing Caragol and turning to run.
"You're mad!"
Kolya shot back.
"If you don't sink, you'll freeze! I like my alternatives less!"
Felix returned, still running, to which the Kislevite could only answer by joining him. Together they sprinted past the stone troll. Snorri looked up at their passing, puzzled, until Gotrek came up behind him and pushed him on after them.
The Troll King is mine, Snorri Nosebiter, but mark this, a lost doom repaid.
Felix's awareness of his surroundings had shrunk to just the snow-covered pebbles between him and the Linsk. He could smell the ice, could see the whirls that the snow made in the water's sickening uphill flow, could already feel his skin clench in preparation of the coming shock. He heard Damir rein in his pony behind him and shout something he couldn't make out over the blood pounding in his ears, just before a new and unfamiliar sound cut it off. It was the sound of a man being thumped from horseback by a swinging boulder. Felix jumped. In that split second he mourned. Damir had been a good man. He hadn't deserved what Ulrika had made of him. There was an impact, a plunging darkness, and then he felt nothing but ice. The fort was coming down around Ulrika's ears. Fist-sized lumps of masonry and decorative gargoyles shattered against the back of her head and left dents in her pauldron plates. The effort of maintaining so many spells at once felt like a pack of dire wolves tearing her mind between them. There was the ghost maze, the portal, the reanimations, the dance macabre that kept her puppets fighting on their strings. No mortal mind, with the autonomic distractions of shivering or breathing, could have worked so efficiently or so fast, but even for her it was proving too much. Something had to give. She dispelled the ghost maze. It was an irrelevancy now that her enemy was at the gates. Then she withdrew the necromantic vigour from her zombie thralls. The Ungols' motions grew torpid, until their efforts at attack became slower even than the trolls that soon stamped the zombies into jelly. Ulrika did not bother attempting to reconstruct the mess. The terrific impact shook the entire fort, from towers to foundations, and the front wall caved in around the charging mass of an ice troll. The ceiling groaned as more of the wall crumbled, masonry shattered against the troll's diamond-hard hide. Her warriors were dropping like dolls. She could hear Gustav shouting for order. The young cocksure had discovered a knack for command just too late. Ulrika focused only on the portal. She could wait no longer. Damir had failed her, and Felix was gone. Had she the time or energy to utter a word, she would have cursed him on the names of Nagash and Neferata, and every lord and lady of undeath she could recount. She should have made Felix a thrall, as she had his nephew, and forced her gift through Katerina's unwilling lips. Kin and lover between them would have kept the wayward mortal in line. It was only on Vlad von Karstein's advice that she had not. A curse on them all. The troll expanded to fill her view. To her enlightened perceptions, it came on as slowly as a glacier, but with the same terrible aura of inevitability. It came to this.
"Warriors, to me!"
she shouted, drawing her sabre and stepping into the shimmering portal. It was time the Troll King learned what he was dealing with. Chapter 14. City of Lost Souls. The empty bridge of Prague had been named with typical Kislevite irony. In times not that far removed, it had been the road by which the young poor of Prague had left behind the whitewashed walls and red-tiled manors of the old town to become soldiers. And the bridge was never empty. The city had seen too much horror for that, and it was a very brave or very drunk man who would cross it alone at night, for fear of dead warriors with a grudge against those who had not fought in their wars. The end times had changed many things. It had not changed that. With a bleating scream that echoed between the struts of the bridge's frozen grey underbelly, a beast man flew over the side barrier. The fur of its chest was matted with blood, as if it had just been hit by a mace. It flailed its arms and legs, wailing in the wish that its gods might suddenly mutate them into wings, until it punched through the ice in a column of black water. The sounds of an ongoing fight spread thinly downriver, or up, as it might well be, as Felix sank numb fingers into the shingle that banked the river and dragged himself painfully ashore. His shivering sent pebbles skittering away, but he didn't even feel it. The fashionable theory amongst the doctors